Ella.
Price, Price, Elliot Price. He's got a thing for smoked meat and fries. Tune in to CFMD. Tune in.
You're tuned in to Sportsnet tonight with your host, Elliot Price, right here on 1280 AM Montreal.
I've had more fun in a dentist's chair.
Here we go, our National Football League countdown with DK Daniel Kalis down to team number 13, and it's not the Raiders. How are you, Dan?
I'm all right, and you? I hope everyone had a good weekend.
Yeah, we had a good weekend. We're one weekend closer to a weekend with football, so we're excited. Let's go, National Football. Hurry up! How you doing?
I couldn't agree more. I can't wait till the season starts. I wish it was tomorrow.
No Giants got hurt on the weekend?
It's one of their possible options if safety got hurt. All right. Their bigger problem is their O-line is a big issue. But we'll be talking about them in a day or two.
All right. Team number 13.
We got the Houston Texans.
The Houston Texans. What is it about the Houston Texans that pushes them towards the playoffs this year?
Going into a training camp, I thought they were one of the more interesting teams. They won the division last year. They have a really, really good defense with, you know, basically everyone coming back. While J.J. Watt is hurt, he looks like he's on schedule for game one. What they were always lacking was offense, quarterback, issues of running back because Foster was always injured, and playmakers. And they went out in the offseason and did that. They got Brock Osweiler, quarterback from Denver. They got Lamar Miller, running back from Miami. They drafted a couple of playmakers in Will Fuller in the first round and Braxton Miller to add to Hopkins, who's a beast of a receiver. The big question mark is we don't know what we got in Brock Osweiler. He showed us seven games, some good games, some bad games when he played for Denver last year. They're banking a lot of money on him that he's going to be able to be. He doesn't have to be, you know, Tom Brady, Drew Brees type of quarterback, but he's got to be a good enough quarterback to make the plays when they need to go along with that amazing defense.
Now, that amazing defense relies on J.J. Watt, who you say is on target to be there for game one. I tell you what, I'm not sure. I don't know. I mean, they need him to be J.J. Watt. He could be just J. Watt.
I definitely agree, and I think for them, if that means maybe holding him back a week or two, I think they will. He's never missed a game before, but a back injury is a back injury, and you never want to mess with that. I think the good thing for them is it looks like Clowney, their number one pick from a couple of years ago, looks like he's finally ready to help them out and make a difference. And I think that takes some pressure off of, A, when they bring Watt back, and B, once they bring Watt back, maybe they don't have to play him every single down because they have other guys who can make plays for them.
I definitely think Clowney's a huge addition to defense. Nobody really is talking about him. It seems like people think just because he was hurt that he's kind of forgotten about, the same as Fowler, I guess you could say. But I agree. I think that takes tremendous pressure off. But if this team's going to go anywhere, they're going to have to score points. Is Brock Osweiler that franchise quarterback? Maybe not this year, but does he end up being that for them?
I'm cautiously optimistic. I'll be honest, again, like most of you, we haven't seen much of him. He had the ups and downs. He looks good. He's a big guy. He could throw the ball downfield. I think the truth is that I don't know that he's necessarily got all the tools to be the best, but if they have these receivers, they've got the running game, if they've got everything going, he's just got to get the ball to them. Now, the problem is going into the training camp, they look like they had a really strong O-line. The problem is Nick Martin, the center they drafted, he's injured with an ankle sprain. They got a right tackle, Newton. He's got a hamstring injury. Their left tackle from last year, Dwayne Brown, he's had a quad injury. He's been out the whole time, and they expect all three of these guys to either be back for the start of the season or early on. But these are things that are obviously a problem, especially when you've got a young quarterback who you want to give him the most amount of time and not have to worry about, you know, where those edge rushes are coming from.
Will Fuller, Braxton Miller, Jalen Strong, three receivers that come behind DeAndre Hopkins. Is this, to me, I think it's one of the deepest and definitely most intriguing wide receiver cores in the NFL. We obviously know Hopkins is going to be number one. Who ends up being that number two and three guy on this?
I think it's actually very interesting because you got Will Fuller, who's a speedster. The guy's got some of the best numbers in running in coming in out of the combine. The problem is he happened to drop the ball every once in a while. And then you got Braxton Miller, the converted quarterback, who's really come a long way in the last couple of years when he switched from quarterback. It's a big, you know, position switch to learn all that, the nuances, running routes, doing all that. But he's getting much better. And I think maybe in the long term, he could be the guy who really, really becomes the playmaker. But the truth is, as long as both of them can do something, can open up the field, take the top off here and there, and open it up a little bit for Hopkins. I also think the addition of Lamar Miller, who he ran really well in Miami, and for some reason, they never really wanted to give him enough carries to really get him going. I think that, you know, Bill O'Brien, the coach in Houston, he likes to use the running game. He's going to use them more. I think that's going to help the receivers. It's going to help Brock. I think it's all of them together. I think they really have a nice mix of playmakers on the team. So it's not all on Hopkins like it was last year.
Well, speaking about him, look, everyone thought Sammy Watkins was the stud receiver coming out of Clemson, but so far it's DeAndre Hopkins who's taken that title. 111 catches last year, over 1,500 yards, 11 touchdowns, pretty amazing. But now, like you said, Lamar Miller catches balls out of the backfield. Will Fuller, Braxton Miller, all these guys. Do you see DeAndre Hopkins taking a step back this year, or is he good enough to keep those stats up even with all these targets around him?
I mean, I think like we've discussed over the last number of weeks, a lot of stuff, you know, like how much a guy can do and produce often is about targets. He's definitely going to see, I don't think he's going to see as many targets as he did last year because when they're still going to double team him. When they do, he's going to throw to one of these other options that he has. And as long as they can make some plays, look, they're never going to be able to be, you know, they're not, I don't think they're as good as Hopkins is, but as long as they can, you know, make a big play here, a big play there, that's enough. So I don't think he's going to have as good a season. But look, we've seen it with the other top receivers. You saw with a guy like Antonio Brown. They added Bryant. They added this guy. They have that guy. He's, you know, Le'Veon Bell out of the backfield. He's still the main guy. He's still the guy they go to when they need to. You see it with other teams as well. The big receivers, the guys you can count on, the ones who make all those plays on third down, you know, big play down the field whenever they need, those guys are always going to get theirs because they really are the guy that makes the offense go.
All right, so you finished this division now, and so these teams, these last three, have come in very close. Indianapolis and Houston and Jacksonville. So this, I mean, playing inside their own division could hurt them as, you know, if you don't finish first, going to be very difficult for a wild card.
I agree, and that's sort of how we had them. I think the teams you just mentioned, all three of them, they're going to be fighting for the division, and then they're also going to be fighting. I wouldn't be surprised if any one of these teams jumps up and picks off a wild card. But the thing is that it's all about, you know, who's going to be healthiest and playing well. And like I said, we got these injuries to the O-line. Today we're finding out that Vontae Davis, the top corner on the Colts, is going to miss at least the whole month of September, so that's going to hurt him. You know the way football is. It's a war of attrition. Who's going to be the healthiest at the end of the day? Luckily for Houston, these O-line issues seem to be now. None of them are season-ending. They should all be ready, like I said, for either week one or early in the season. The same like Watts. I think they have a good enough team that they can maybe withstand a week or two without these guys, but if it's anything longer than that, you know, it's going to be it's tough.
All right, so before we let you go, just looking at Houston's schedule, they get the Patriots in week three without a quarterback and now without running back Deion Lewis. So what does this do to the Patriots as they get ready to start a season without a couple of key members?
Also to mention, they also lost their right tackle, Sebastian Vollmer,
right,
and a backup, but I was fighting for one of their other line jobs, Shaq Mason. So that definitely doesn't help them. The thing that the Patriots will have going for them on that week is that they are at home and they get Houston coming in on a short week, which is always tough for the road team. So, you know, with some of the guys we've discussed today, some of the injured guys, whether it be Watts or some of these O-line guys, it's possible that, you know, they might not be back by then. The other thing is that with a lot of these new players on offense, it's going to take them some time to gel. You know, even they get some preseason games, but, you know, it's going to take them a couple full NFL games to get really, you know, a cohesive unit. So the Patriots could be lucky in getting them on the right, you know, the right time of the season.
All right, DK, thank you. Team number 13, the Texans. We'll talk tomorrow.
All right, guys. Have a good night.
Good job. All right. The Browns, the Niners, the Titans, the Ravens, the Lions, the Bucks, the Chargers, the Rams, the Falcons, Bears, Dolphins, Washington, Eagles, Saints, Cowboys, Bills, Jets, Colts, Jaguars, and number 13, the Texans from Houston.
Well, it's lonesome in this old town. Everybody puts me down. I'm a face without a name. just walking in the rain, going back to Houston, Houston, Houston. I got holes in both of my shoes while I'm a walking case of the blues. Saw a dollar yesterday, but the wind blew it away, going back to Houston, Houston, Houston. I haven't eaten in about a week. I'm so hungry when I walk, I squeak. Nobody calls me friend. It's sad the shape I'm in, going back to Houston, Houston, Houston.
Not enough Dean Martin on the radio, that's what I say. Houston is team number 13 in our National Football League countdown. All right, still to come before we go, we'll hear from Giovanni Sardo, the impact. Not so good. Not good. Nicht good. Bad. Very bad. On the weekend, we'll talk about that. What can I say? I will also, Grant. Well, Grant is very excited about UFC 202. And you know, Gabe Morenci. It'll be a war of how much can Grant get in. This will be tonight's contest. So Sports Rage is coming on just after 9:30. And if there's any time left, we will hear from Canadians free agent signee, Alex Radulov, who came to town today and met the media.
Say goodbye to buffering, stuttering, and annoying pop-ups. Say hello to Sportsnet Now, a new way to stream sports without cable TV. Matchups from the MLB, NBA, and the NHL. And more of your favorite Sportsnet programming. Plus, watch every Blue Jays game on any device in true high definition. Your sports, your way, starts now. Visit sportsnet.ca/now to start your free trial.
Ding, 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 ding.
C'est moi qui est responsable.
You're tuned in to Sportsnet Tonight with your host, Elliot Price.
It's on me.
Exclusively on CFMB, 1280 AM, Montreal.
Elliot. Price, there was shrinkage.
I'm so disappointed. Elliot.
Price. You are a meathead.
Very disappointed.
I'm the guy.
Elliot, 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 Elliot.
Every weeknight at 8 p.m.
Wow, I'm kind of excited for the hockey season now. If you missed it on Saturday night, you're not Canadian. Tragically hip, and here a third of the country watched. And here's the set list. Did they not play a song that you loved? I want to know. 50 Mission Cap, Courage, Wheat Kings at the 100th Meridian, in a world possessed by the human mind. What Blue, Tired as a Machine, My Music at Work, Lake Fever, Toronto Number 4, Putting Down, Twist My Arm, Three Pistols, Fiddler's Green, Little Bones, Last of the Unplucked Gems, Something On, Poets, Bob Cajun, Fireworks, and then the Encores game, New Orleans is Sinking, Boots or Hearts, Blow It High Dough, Second Encore, Nautical Disaster, Scared, and Grace 2, Third Encore, Locked in the Trunk of a Car, Gift Shop, and they finished up with song number 30, Ahead by a Century. Just a terrific, terrific night for Canadians who care about that kind of stuff. Not a terrific night on Saturday for the Impact. Here is the man who speaks Impact with us. It's Giovanni Sardo. Hey, Giovanni, are you okay?
I'm back to being absolutely disgusted.
Yeah, I can understand. That was disgusting. So, what the hell went wrong?
You know, watching this game, the only thing I could think about was the legendary press conference by Herman Edwards, the coach of the Jets. Huh. You play to win the game.
So what, did they play to lose? What happened here?
First of all, with the formation, I think that, you know, going again with the same style of starting 11 with Callum Mallett, who looked out of place in the previous game, putting him back in, it really, you know, cut away from the Montreal Impact's creativity in the midfield and the ability to push forward. But in the simplest of terms, they took the Chicago Fire lightly. They let them off the hook. They thought it was going to be a walk in the park, and they put in an absolutely heartless display.
So there goes 3 points. I mean, all when all is said and done, and you look back on this in the standings, and, I mean, they could play well between now and the end of the season, but you don't get these 3 points back, and it could cost them in the end because they're a good team, and they'll win some games. And this one here, you know, could cost you the home game. That could cost you a chance at a championship. You never know. And I don't know, so what do you do to correct this? I mean, here they are. I mean, they're playing in a couple of days here.
Well, you have to look at it right now in the standings. They're 8 points out of first. Granted, they still have two games in hand. But when you look at the rest of the schedule, 10 games left, five of them are at home, and five of them are away from Stade Saputo, where we know they're offensively inept and they have problems. So they have to key in really on getting max points on the rest of the games at home. But there's no gimme games anymore. There's no easy games. Every single team that they face from here till the end is battling for the playoff spot and is battling for playoff position. Until Mauro Biello finds a way to motivate his troops properly, I would start fearing missing the playoffs.
No, that's not going to happen. Stop it. It was just one game. You're a little upset. You need to calm down. You need to sit in a quiet room.
I've been trying to control the emotion.
All right.
But you know what? The simple fact is that their performances have been inconsistent all season long. You know, they had the game away at BC where, you know, they were, you know, the worst team at home in the MLS. They weren't able to perform properly. They had one of the worst teams in the MLS face them at home, which was the Houston Dynamo. They ended up winning, but it was a scrap-it-out win. Now you have an embarrassing loss to the Fire. This team doesn't have any consistency, doesn't have a true, you know, dedication to this season, and they're just not showing the way they should be playing.
All right, so you change the roster up for the next game? You change the lineup?
Well, if you take a look, you have two games now coming up in the next few days. So obviously, your workhorses in the midfield in Bernardello and Donadel are going to need a rest at some point. Drogba, although he did it earlier in the season, can he really go three games, full 90 minutes? I don't think so. So you're going to have to see Becker come back into the lineup. You're going to see, you know, at the forward position, you may need Drogba to get a rest. Rotation is key, but you may end up burning out your players prematurely. What's Biello going to do? Only he knows. But key guys need some rest coming up.
All right. We'll talk to you later in the week. Hopefully things are better. One game can do that.
Well, they need to find their heart, and they need to find it fast, or else we'll be quoting Jim Mora when he said playoffs.
Giovanni Sardo on the Impact. Thank you.
My pleasure. Have a great night.
Can't shake these blues.
till I lose. And I just can't shake these boots. All right, there you go. There's your impact for the night. Somebody lost, somebody won Saturday night UFC 202. There was a bunch of that going on, and Grant Robinson knows, and Gabe Morenci will bring it to life. Sports rage coming up in a couple of moments after Grant's update. Next.
The dog is a demon, he swallows me whole.
It's more than a hockey jersey. It's a badge of honor, a symbol of pride. And when the world's best wear it, they're not just players. They are pillars, carrying a nation on their shoulders. This September, Crosby, Kane, Ovechkin, Lundqvist, and over 150 of the world's brightest stars are coming to Toronto to compete in an international tournament and stake their claim as hockey's best. The World Cup of Hockey. For more information, go to WCH2016.com.
So you're an expert.
That's right, tough guy.
Hey! Who is your daddy? Elia. And what does he do?
Zippo, nada.
Hey! Elia. Elia.
C'est moi.
Elia.
You're an expert.
Yes.
Elia.
Hey!
Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price.
You're not an expert.
Right here on 1280 AM, Montreal.
What do you mean I'm not an expert?
He's got a rocket for an arm.
And that's why we brought in an expert, my friends, Gabriel Morenci. Nice to talk. Boy, it's been so long since Friday. How you doing?
Always a pleasure, Elliot. How you doing?
I'm okay. How was your Saturday night? I'm sure you are much more enthused by UFC than you are by Tragically Hip.
Well, I appreciate the great intro, Elliot. And you know what? The only thing that lives up, big, often hyped events don't live up to the hype, besides your show, of course. But
of course.
I'm not a diehard Tragically Hip fan.
I know that.
By any stretch of the imagination, but it was hard not to be caught up on Saturday night. And I had the volume up with the concert, and I was watching the fights with the volume down, and it worked out well, as basically the Hip concert ended just as Rick Story and Cowboy Cerrone were entering the octagon. So it worked out well, and it kind of it was anticlimactic for me, to be honest. You know, I've lost people very close to me due to cancer, not just that, but the exact same brain tumor that unfortunately is taking Gord Downie's life. So it personally affected me and took me off my betting game a little bit. You got to be cold-hearted. You got to be ruthless, man. And I showed a heart on Saturday night, and it caught me. And my bets weren't quite as good as they normally are. But as far as Connor and Diaz is concerned, I was excited for the fight. You know, Diaz is a badass and Connor's a badass. I was excited for the fight. I knew it would be a good fight. But I sort of had the shoulder shrug. I told you guys on the Friday night, I'm almost looking more forward to the Anthony Johnson fight just because it actually means something besides guys making millions of dollars. Both Connor and Diaz delivered for the $5 million that they made.
Well, this is my question for you. Look, looking at the fight, a lot of people, like the post-fight talk, is talking about one of the best fights ever and how it was epic. Don't get me wrong, I love the fight, but I find it tough to say because, like you said, there was no belt on the line. What made me nervous and stuff was, McGregor's kind of career and reputation in a lot of ways was on the line, so I guess that saved it in a sense. But do you think that saying best fight ever or calling it epic was too far?
Yeah, I would agree with that. Now listen, it was a great fight, but there's been some real battles along the way. It's hard. I forget so many of them, man. They go in and out. There's, especially with cards every week, and we live in this best ever era all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just because Selena Gomez sells more records than Janis Joplin doesn't mean she's better. So we live in this. Oh, it's the best. Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors, are they the best ever? They beat the Bulls. They didn't win the championship. So, we get ahead of ourselves, the best ever. People remember what they saw last. They're idiots. So I agree with you in that sense. And part of me wonders as well, I was thinking after, and I'm a big Diaz fan, but, 170-pounder that couldn't knock out Conor McGregor. And, that kind of rubs me the wrong way because I got caught up in the emotion of it. I thought that Diaz won the fight, but I was emotionally invested. And normally I'm very, very, even if I have money on something, if I have money on a basketball game, if it's traveling, it's traveling. Like, I'll bitch either way. I call it out. I call everybody out. But I'm not going to lie. When it comes to the fight game, and after a couple of drinks, you can get involved. You know, if you like one guy more than the other, you might be a little biased. But it's, you know, that we've been arguing about how we judge fights for 100 years, 100 plus years, right? And, you know, Conor landed more significant shots. He did. He had a couple of the knockdowns. He landed more kicks. But, you know, Diaz absolutely pummeled him for like half the fight. And, you know, don't be fooled by Diaz's face, man. Yeah, you know, I can make fight, Diaz man. Bleed and he could kill me. So, you know, it's like GSP, basically. Remember GSP was the same way? You know, GSP would basically get punched once and then boom, he's got a black eye. It's just, you know, he's got sensitive skin tissue, and Diaz has been busted up a lot. So the blood, people are almost like, well, look at Diaz, look how beat up he was. He got killed. Anybody that tries to sell you that you judge a fight winner by the blood is an idiot. You know, if there was ever a fight, if there was ever a damn fight that there should have been called a draw, I think it was it. But, you know, now they have a trilogy, and you know, now people are booking their tickets back to Vegas for part three in the future.
So what are you supposed to do with the combat sports? Because as you said, and this is the way I described it last week when it came to all the craziness with the boxing at the Olympics. If you think going into a fight, you're not supposed to, but you know, you got to judge the fight. If you think that one guy is better than the other, or you like one guy, you cannot help but watch as you did. You watch the fight almost through the eyes of Diaz. It's almost impossible not to. There's so much going on that you tend to see the action coming from one side more than the other, and you almost want there to have, hey, look, it's not me in there. You want the guy to knock out the other guy.
Okay? You know, Elliot, and you know, and it shouldn't be this way, but judges are wooed by the crowd.
Yeah.
You know, and we see it all the time because the crowd will be more interested and more vested in one of the fighters. And, ooh, every time they throw a punch, you get the oohs and the ahs. Doesn't matter if it automatically connects. It trickles down to Joe Rogan. And Joe Rogan's the best in the business. The guy's awesome at what he does. But he cheers for one fighter over another. He does. Because he lives in L.A. Maybe he knows somebody. Maybe he's buddies with the corner man. And then instinctively, it trickles down to the judges in the same way, Elliot, in baseball. You know, Chris Sale's going to get a call that... you know, that I'm looking for a scrub now. A.J. Cole is not. Poor A.J. Cole. Stepped up on short notice, but I'm calling him a scrub tonight. But, you know, you're exactly right. The perception becomes reality. We see it with the same thing. We see it in life. We see it in politics. We see it in the same thing with college football. People say, oh, these preseason polls, they don't mean a darn thing. Well, dude, don't they? You know, because if you're ranked 21st right now and you run the table, good for you. If the team that is ranked third right now runs the table, you're not catching them.
Yeah.
So,
and you know what?
We don't. I guess the preseason poll did mean something.
Wait,
so, you know, it's there is a perception and a reality that falls into place. I got caught up in it. I don't have a problem with Conor winning the fight, but it goes back to the way they do it is, so we got five rounds and you go by who won the round. And you can have a fighter win a round by, you know, kicking a guy a couple of times, maybe scores a takedown or two, doesn't inflict a lot of damage. And then in the next round, you know, the guy, not to mention, I think Conor ran for about, so if the fight was 25 minutes, Conor probably ran for about four of them. I like somebody who, I'm not good. If I wasn't an idiot, I'd be able to break it down online. I swear to God, man, Conor backpedaled and ran, man, as much as Usain Bolt did, if you add up the meters that he ran. So, you know, I think the fight was a draw, but I don't have a problem with Conor winning. It wasn't the crime of the century or anything like that, but it was a fun night of fights.
Knock him out, I say. No, submit. Knock him out.
Yeah, don't leave it to the judges. You know what? That's what Dana White says. Don't leave it to the judges.
And they were both close. Look, you said 170 and not being able to knock him out kind of changed your opinion on Diaz in a sense. Look, a lot of people don't like McGregor.
Well, look, dude, you saw it. He rained down like 65 significant blows. Dude, I thought he was going to finish him at that point.
Oh, the end of the third.
And if he does finish him, he wins the fight, obviously, right? So, that's why, because, you know, I bitched after on Twitter a bit. I was like, oh, that's BS, you know. You know, because not one judge gave him the fight. So, You know, one of the judges made it a draw. But in hindsight, I'll admit when I'm wrong, you know, after sleeping on it and sort of rewatching it and sort of settling in, that, you know what? Diaz knocked the crap out of him for two rounds. You know, did a lot of damage, but he didn't finish him. And Connor dug down deep in that fifth round. And in the fourth round, I thought the takedown at the end sort of saved Diaz, but let's be honest, when there's a trilogy at stake in Las Vegas, yeah. I mean, it was kind of naive of us to believe that it was going to go any other way.
Last thing, look, him taking this fight again at 170 instead of doing it at 155 or going back down to 145, and you're giving a guy who beat you up after 11 days a full training camp versus you. To me, I thought it was a huge risk by McGregor, but it shows he really believes what he says, like the trash talk he says. Did this fight and him taking it or how he fought in it change your opinion of him at all?
No, because it's almost like we're setting the bar low in the sense with Donald Trump that he doesn't insult someone for a night. he's pivoted now, he's on point, and I'm not comparing it to, but no one else would have been able to call this shot. So, you know, yeah, it worked out well for him. And Connor's got, Connor's got cojones, man. There's no doubt about it. And what it did for me, for Connor's perspective, is the dude can take a punch. You know what I mean? So the question, and also it makes me wonder, if Diaz couldn't finish him off, what's Aldo going to do to him? Or even an Eddie Alvarez, for that matter. But I think Eddie might be a better striker. Which might be a fight we're probably going to end up seeing in Conor and Alvarez for 155. Listen, I've never disrespected Conor McGregor. I've been annoyed by his antics. There's a big difference. As far as him being a fighter is concerned, I think the guy's awesome. I mean, and if anything, as you stated, what I took away from it is his ultimate toughness for eating those shots, for not giving up, because he was gassed, man. Mm-hmm. You know, midway through that third round, it looked like it was over. And, you know, even his corner almost was resigning to it, in which they, you know, it's the strategy. They told him, they said, get him against the fence, lean on the fence, and rest up a bit. That was the advice. Yet, you know, he, and I'm pardon the cliche, but the heart of the champion, he did dig down deep as the fight went on. I don't have a problem with Conor winning. I don't buy into this, I'm the king crap and all this. You're not Chuck Liddell. You know, you're not John Jones. You know, you didn't run the table. You didn't reinvent the game like Tito Ortiz or Ken Shamrock. So the over boisterousness pisses me off. But, who am I to criticize a man that's making as much money as this? He's changed the game in the sense that he's forced the UFC to actually pay people. Because, you know, Nate Diaz has been putting fights on like this for 10 years, and he made $40,000 a fight. So he made $2 million the other night. You got to give Conor credit for that.
Kay Morenci at Sports Rage on Twitter, always a treat. We'll talk soon.
Hey, always a pleasure, guys.
Like a dog, down on the cars, square in the spotlight, sweating real hard. All soaked in blood, like a newborn babe, sharp thing hidden in my hand, shaped like an astrolabe. Gonna stick you in the eye with a foreign object. Poke you in the eye with a foreign object. March through the red mist, never get my vision clear. Learn to love this kind of atmosphere. Strike funny poses, keep my weapon handy. Whip my head around a little, get blood on the front row. I'm gonna jab you in the eye with a foreign object. I personally will stab you in the eye with a foreign object.
This, not a lot of wrestling songs, my friend.
Yeah, I don't think this is really wrestling, but it works.
What do you mean? It is a wrestling song.
Stab you in the eye.
Yeah, blood all over the front row.
I respect the honesty of the song. It doesn't really hold. It's not a ballad. You know, I wouldn't say it's a ballad.
Well, you didn't hear the rest of it. All right? It's the Mountain Goats, and it's called Foreign Object. And it's always a treat to talk to Gabriel Morenci, Sports Rage.
I feel like I've wanted to sing that song to somebody before in my life. I feel like there's been a time where this would have applied, you know, so that works.
All right. Alex Radulov finally got an opportunity to come to town to say hello to the Montreal media as he gets ready for his first season as a Montreal Canadian. And he knows what it brings, and we'll hear from him next. I'm going to stab you in the eye.
Say goodbye to buffering, stuttering, and annoying pop-ups. Say hello to Sportsnet Now, a new way to stream sports without cable TV. Matchups from the MLB, NBA, and the NHL. And more of your favorite Sportsnet programming. Plus, watch every Blue Jays game on any device in true high definition. Your sports, your way, starts now. Visit sportsnet.ca/now to start your free trial.
Price.
Oui, papa.
Price.
He is a loathsome, offensive brute. Yet I can't look away.
Price.
He loves golf and epic naps.
You're tuned into Sportsnet Tonight with your host, Elliot Price, right here on 1280 AM Montreal.
Oui, papa.
Oui, papa. Right, Alex Radulov meeting the Montreal media for the first time today. Had an opportunity to see the new facilities in Brossard and was suitably impressed, as anybody would. It looks just like the Bell Center, only it's not the Bell Center. It's where they practice, and it's just unbelievable. Here's a kid. Well, he's a kid to me, you know. Not Mike. But we do have Russian in the family. But I'm getting away from what we're trying to do here. Alex Radulov meeting with the media here today. Played his junior hockey in Quebec, so he got a front row view of what goes on around here when it comes to the nonsense of the Montreal Canadiens.
Absolutely, yes. Because you know, when we start talking about where I'm going to be, and Mark, we talk on the phone first. And then I fly to New York, and we had a meeting there. Like he was saying, you know, it's a special place to play because of the you guys, you know, media and the fans. They all want to win every time, every day, every night, and that's who I am. I hate losing. I hate when something going not our way. So I just want to win, and I think this is the place, and I'm ready for it. So.
That's right. Every day, every night. Don't you never forget it, my friend. This is Montreal. It's the Montreal Canadiens, and you, sir, have a lot to prove.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, I wasn't here for 4 years, and you know, I know what people expecting from me, and I know they didn't see me for like a few years. But like I said, I'm ready, and I wanna prove to everybody, to myself. First of all, because that's the matter for me, you know, like that I can play here and then be a good player here and help the team.
Alex Radulov. The bottom line is, I know I called him a kid. He left the National Hockey League as a kid, and he comes back as an older player, as a guy who was expected to show leadership while he was in the KHL.
It's a big thing, you know. Like I was there and playing, and I was like, we got a pretty young team, and I had that thing that I was a leader and playing a lot of minutes and try to live as example, you know, like in the locker room and ice and off ice. It's helped me a lot, you know. It's changed the vision of my vision and the way I have to work and I have to be, you know what I mean.
As he mentioned, you know, 4 years away from the National Hockey League, playing in Russia in the KHL, close to home, so and making money. I mean, you know, there's money to be made in Russia. So why are you coming back to the National Hockey League?
Well, you know, I've been always saying that it's the best league and there's the best players playing here in the high level, and that's why, you know, and when you're looking back, you know, times fly, and right now I think this is a chance for me to be here and play in the best league and finally get a chance to win the cup, and that's the main thing.
No doubt the Montreal Canadiens have more Russian flavor than many teams in the National Hockey League. And so, you know, naturally you assume Alex Radulov, you're coming to the Montreal Canadiens because, you know, there's people that speak Russian. There are people that you can relate to. Good answer when he was asked today if that was a reason or reasons why he was coming to put on the Bleu Blanc Rouge.
It's fun, yeah. It's good, you know. Like I got the guys who I can like speak Russian. I don't know, but for me, it's not like necessary, you know. Like it's nice. It's good to have Russian guys in the team, and obviously, but like I said, it's not the point. I pick Montreal, you know.
Radulov, nice to hear from him. Didn't get in as much Connor McDavid as we'd like. We'll throw that into tomorrow night's show. We'll also talk to the general manager of the Pittsburgh Pirates. He will join us, Neil Huntington. We've been Huntington him down since spring training, and finally an opportunity to catch up, and they're doing it to him again, right? Pittsburgh Pirates torturing him the whole season before they finally get into it, and now what? They've got swept on the weekend, so they lost all three games, and so they're fighting it. I think they were down 3-1 in the ninth inning tonight, so they're hanging about three games or so away from the wild card. We'll talk to Neil Huntington about that. We'll also get down to team number 12 in our National Football League countdown. Dan Kalis will join us again tomorrow night. We'll have Sean Farrell in studio, so that should be fun. Sean Farrell from NHL.com, also out there with the Impact. Maybe we'll get a different perspective than Giovanni Sardo, but I doubt it. When the worst team in the league comes in, doesn't win on the road ever, and then spanks you 3-0. Not so good, I say. We thank all of the people that joined us tonight. Thank you very much. Arash Madani, wrapping up the Olympics from Rio. Sportsnet's Arash Madani. Abby Goldberg, the sports sociologist. That's who you are. That's who you shall be. Daniel Kalis, DK, counting them down, our NFL insider. The Texans are team number 13 in our National Football League countdown. Thanks to Giovanni for talking Impact with us, and the one, the only, Gabriel Morenci at Sports Rage joined us, and we commiserated on UFC 202. Thank you to Jamie Farrell for handling things behind the board, and executive producer Freddie Iuni on behalf of Grant Robinson. I'm Elliot Price. Be sure to check us out. If you missed any of the show, you can catch our podcast on sportsnet.ca. Move around there. You'll find it. We're also on iTunes, or you could just look us up on Twitter, and there's a direct link right there. Thank you. We'll see you tomorrow night.
Welcome to Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price. Brought to you by Ye Olde Orchard Pub.
Here's a lead pass. In on goal, McDavid scores! 3-1 Canada!
Here's the 1-2 pitch from Martinez. Ball hit out into center field, going back. Marquise Grissom. He's got it! Dennis Martinez has pitched a perfect game.
Here's a shot. They score!
The 2-1 pitch. Cordero swings. Base hit. The Expos will win. The Expos will win. Cordero with a base hit to win the ballgame in the bottom of the ninth inning. The drought is over. Drink it in, Canada. World champions.
And now here's your host, Elliot Price.
I kept trying to put it on. Of course, they wanted to watch the fight, and I kept saying we're missing a little piece of Canadian history, and they didn't seem to understand it. So I definitely did watch it a little bit. It was amazing. I think my dad is a little bit more upset than I am, but I definitely tried to tune in, but my friends had other plans. So
first thing we climb a tree, and maybe then we talk. Or sit silently and listen to our thoughts. Illusions of someday cast in a golden light. No dress rehearsal. This is our life.
It was awesome. We had a good group of guys. I met up with my coach, Kirk Muller, who's from Kingston, and one of Gord's good buddies. Saw Dan Aykroyd. Everyone was emotional before the show. The fans outside chanting, Gordy, kind of going in. So I had the hair on my arm standing like completely up straight the whole show. Before the band came out, lights went off. Chants of hip started going, and I think we had 6,700 people in there just, electric and rocking, and the show went by for me so fast, and you kind of take it all in, and I see a lot of concerts as if you follow me or whatnot, but this was one of the best things I've ever seen, almost like a game seven with no other hockey game ever to be played again. That feeling just knowing he's putting everything into his one last show is pretty special.
I tilted your crown. You tilted my hand. Rain falls in real time. The rain fell through the night. No dress rehearsal. This is.
One-third of the country, almost 12 million people, watched CBC's final hip concert on Saturday night.
I think it would have been even higher, to be honest. Look, that's against closing ceremonies, which I'm not going to say is huge, but a lot of people watch that against one of the biggest events of the UFC, and still 33% of a country's population. It's pretty impressive.
By the way, we heard from Connor McDavid and Scotty Upshaw. Talking about the last hip concert on Saturday night. So the Olympics have come to a close, and I'll give it to Arash Madani. He picked the last song that the hip was going to play, the one you just heard, Ahead by a Century. And Arash will join us just after 8:30. And he'll wrap the Olympics from Rio. Thank you to Arash Madani for joining us a couple of times from the Olympics. We will hear from, 3 out of 4 gold medal winners for Canada in our voices, and the brother of the other gold medal winner. That's coming up. Today in Montreal, Alex Radulov was presented to the media. Welcome to Montreal. He's been here before, but not as a Montreal Canadian, and now he has. Oh, why doesn't Shea Weber come? Oh, why doesn't Shea Weber come? No one said anything about Radulov. He hasn't been here, but now he has. So we'll hear a little bit from Radulov and a whole bunch of other stuff, including, I'm afraid to hear from Giovanni Sardo on the impact. This was a gimme, and they lost the gimme to the worst team in the league, 3-0. So.
And that one, not like a lucky bounce, no. Dominated by, like you said, even the other team was saying it's a gimme for Montreal. That's bad.
I think Oy Vey will not cover it. Gabriel Morenci will be back to get us the lowdown on what happened on Saturday night at UFC 202. I know Grant watched it. We'll let Grant and Gabe reminisce about UFC 202, and I'll wait for the next one and all the nonsense that goes on in between. We shall see. As usual, our opener is brought to you by Miss Your Drain. Man, it's nice to associate with yourself with the best, because then you just have to tell the truth. Miss Your Drain is the best. Sooner or later, you're bound to run into a drain or a pipe problem. Happens to everybody, and you'll be happy you were listening to this show when I was telling you about Miss Your Drain. Not only will he do a better job than anyone else in town, he'll do a camera inspection. He'll know exactly what's going on faster than anybody else, and that means better and less expensive. Miss Your Drain, 514-640-0070. I ask you to repeat the number with me, but really, all you have to do is go online and look for Miss Your Drain at missyourdrain.com. 514-640-0070. I don't have to spell Miss Your, do I? I mean, you know, if you got to look up Miss Your Drain and you don't know how to spell Miss Your, you're in a whole lot of trouble. I figure if you can't spell Miss Your, then they're going to drive you out of the province anyways in no time. So that'll take care of that. Miss Your Drain, missyourdrain.com. 514-640-0070. The opening face-off with Grant Robinson is coming up.
You're listening to Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price. Tackling the latest headlines and the hottest topics, it's time for the opening face-off with Elliot Price and Grant Robinson.
The Olympics have finally wrapped up, Elliot.
No!
It's done. Hey, they gave us a lot to talk about. It would have been a rough summer without them, I think. We would have found a way. But let's be honest, I'm very thankful for the Olympics. No shortage of stories. And look, we're going to give them some respect. It was done after our last show, so we'll recap. It's Monday. Looking back at it, what do you think of Canada's overall performance
terrific.
At the Olympics? So not just good, above that. Saying terrific.
What do we expect? I don't know. You know, we were expecting, because somebody told us that we were going to win 19 medals, we won 22 medals. I have no idea. It's really good. Yeah, we go there. We had, aside from the 22 medals, right, there were, I think, 50 top five finishes.
Yeah, a lot of, like, so I said, we should have a copper
well
medal, maybe.
Olympics. Whatever, we did well. We did fine.
A lot of, and like you said, sports where they don't usually get those medals, you know? Like, overall gymnastics, first of all, have you ever heard of an Olympic medalist from Canada in the gymnastics side? It's the highest overall for the women, the fifth place. I thought it was great. I honestly was very proud watching them. I watched part of it from the U.S., right?
Here's the thing. If the Americans had won 30 less medals, Would they know?
Well, the only way you can compare it is to your own country.
I understand.
Like the last 4 years.
But our medals are feel so much better,
yeah, absolutely,
than theirs.
But if you tell them next time, whoa, you won 20 less than 4 years ago,
they won't even know
then
the
it's
difference.
Then it's a problem.
Us, we have two medals. If they won 20 less, nobody would notice. How many did they win altogether, the Americans? 600? What was
no,
the final
I don't think
total?
It was 600. I know they were 50-something up on, or
yeah,
19
exactly.
Or 15 golds
whatever.
At least. Definitely dominant by them, but I'll say this, look, terrific to watch and look at the stats. 22 was the most we ever had. In Atlanta, 96, we had that. We won the most golds we've won since 92, so there was those. And forget just the totals, just... I find this Olympics had everything for Canada. We had a repeat gold, so an expected gold, Rosie McLennan, right? So somebody who was the best, still is. We had a surprise emergence, Penny Oleksiak's dominance, 16 years old, no one knew her. The exit of one of the best on top, the bronze by Sinclair and the woman, I thought that was great. And then exceeding already high expectations, DeGrasse, unexpected golds in dominant fashion, Dwayne didn't miss a jump. You know, I thought it was really... pretty amazing to watch, and it left me wanting a lot more, and I cannot wait for 2020. I think two athletes definitely put the world on notice, and they'll be talked about for 4 years now, right? DeGrasse and Oleksiak. So definitely a great job by Canada there. I asked you this after the first week. What was your favorite moment of it, right? Now, you said outside of Canadian moments, there was nothing, so I won't even ask you outside of Canada. But after the whole Olympics, what's either your favorite moment or the image you're not going to forget that you're taking with you?
There was the bromance.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Usain Bolt and Andre DeGrasse. And again, you know, Derek Drouin's high jump gold medal. You know, I really didn't know a whole lot about him going in here, and he blew everyone away. I mean, he didn't miss. He didn't miss until he went for a world record when he already had the gold medal. And as you probably heard him on this show, he pretty much said, you know, there's a lot taken out. You already know you won the gold medal.
You're emotional.
Yeah, you've already zapped yourself up to win the gold medal. You win the gold medal after that, I don't know.
And how he jumps is relaxed, right? You're not relaxed after knowing you won the gold.
Canada aside, the stat from these Olympics that blew me away, of the top 150 medal winners of all time,
okay?
Of the top 150 Olympic medal winners of all time, Usain Bolt is the only one
to never have lost. Is that right?
Has no silver and no bronze.
And he didn't. And he didn't, no fourths, no fifths,
nine
nothing.
Gold.
Right? Nine
no
events.
No silver,
nine golds.
No bronze. Only one of 150 with no silver and no bronze.
I thought it was great. And you said the bromance. I agree without a doubt. Andre DeGrasse, what he did. I've said it through these past weeks. Every time it pretty much comes up. To me, there's no bigger stage at the Olympics and maybe in sports than the 100-meter dash and the 200 meters kind of right there behind it when the same people race. And there's no bigger athlete than Usain Bolt. There's no bigger shadow casted by any athlete other than him. And yet somehow during
fastest
this
man
moment,
in the world. It used to be the fastest man in the world and the heavyweight champ.
Yeah, well, exactly. And now boxing has kind of felt, and the 100 meters is going up because of Usain Bolt. And somehow still behind that, Andre DeGrasse in the same race, while Bolt still killed it, don't get me wrong, but DeGrasse was the only guy there with him both times, and somehow he became a headline when the only headline should have been three-peat, four-bolt, you know what I mean? Bet fastest ever, and yet DeGrasse was so impressive. He became a storyline. I can't wait to see the kid in 4 years. He's 21 years old, and Bolt shadow won't be there in 2020 in Tokyo, so he's definitely what I'm going to remember. Crossing the finish line, and he thought he would beat Bolt. He was mad that he didn't win.
You're supposed to.
We
talked about that so much over the last few months. Yep. No matter how bad you are, right? If you're not sitting in that dressing room thinking today we're going to win, then don't bother playing.
Yeah, you don't train for 4 years to say I'm going to lose. Yeah. That's for sure. Last question, kind of regarding this golf. In the Olympics was a big question mark beforehand. Rory McIlroy, we know how he felt. After watching it, seeing how it went, was golf in the Olympics a success? And what happens next for it? Does it stay or go?
That's a good question. I think it was a success. Certainly Justin Rose brought some fire to it for the men. The women had a wonderful tournament. And I think that it is higher on the food chain than Olympic gold for the women than for the men in comparison to their majors.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's just the way it is. I mean, the men's majors are so ingrained that it's difficult to push your way into that.
There's a lot of money on the line, let's be honest, too, with the majors. It's very, you're not skipping a major to go to the Olympics, right? That's for sure.
Well, no, but you don't have to.
Well, that's my point. I see no reason for this to go. Look, 4 years from now, no Zika virus, right? And maybe Rose getting to brag for 4 years about his gold medal, maybe that bugs some people. Maybe they say, hey, I'd like to have that. You win a major, you're forgotten in 3 months because somebody else wins it, right?
You win the Masters, you're not forgotten.
Well, okay, fair, but I think it should be there. I watched it. I enjoyed it.
Who won the Masters this year?
Couldn't even tell you.
Danny Willett.
There. See? Forgotten.
I know.
Forgotten. Who won the Olympics? You asked me that in the next 4 years, I'll remember.
Okay. Yeah, because you don't have, you know, you won't have to worry next year. Did someone win this year?
Well, I thought it was great. I think it's no question. Give it another chance. Yep. Because it takes time sometimes. Like you said, it's not easy to ingrain it in there, but it doesn't have to be better than the Masters, right? If you put it as the fifth most important tournament in a year, I'm okay with that. I have no problem. I thought golf was great. This one, I don't think you watched it. You said you were watching Tragically Hip, but McGregor Diaz, first of all, did you watch it?
Was it
anything from it?
Was it this week?
It was this weekend. Did you see anything from it?
I did not.
Not highlights, anything?
I did not.
So I won't ask analysis on the fight.
I know what happened.
Then.
I read the story on the fight, but I did not watch it.
So this win, okay, for example, I know you didn't watch it, but you've seen how much was on the line and how much was built up. What does this win mean to McGregor in his career? Because he risked a lot fighting this guy again.
How?
If you lose to a non-title fighter twice, McGregor makes all his money. Why does he make more money than anybody else? Because he talks better, and it's real hard to talk trash when you've been beaten up by a nobody twice, right? Well, not a nobody, but a non-title holder. Right? It's he could have really risked his career doing this. And he did it literally because he did it at the same weight. Sorry. He could have went back down to 155, fought at 170. He's 145 pounds, goes up two weight classes. Did you see pictures of the fight? He's huge compared to McGregor. Mm-hmm. And I think it really helped kind of establish him. A lot of people, you heard Gabe last week.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, if he gets knocked around in his next fight, it won't matter,
and,
right?
And that's any time, right?
So, you know what? You never know what's going to happen in the next fight, so you take the fight, okay? You take the payday, and you hope for the best. And again, it goes back to what we were talking about. You're going into the fight, you're thinking, I'm going to win. So it doesn't matter who I fight.
And I'll say this at the end. That's what I think is so different about McGregor. He really does, and he puts his money where his mouth is. And he goes, and he'll take any fight. He wants to fight the champ at that weight now. And I really do think at this moment, he may be the most intriguing athlete in any sport.
Oh, you've lost your mind.
Look at the money he makes compared to anybody else. It's
the
like
most
Tiger Woods,
intriguing athlete in any sport.
If you look at... Well, okay, by that, I don't mean the most dominant, anything like that.
No,
but
I understand what you're saying.
If he goes and does it, every athlete in the world does a press conference tomorrow, I think his is the most watched. Yeah. I think he's learned, he's found the recipe, whatever it is. And look, since you didn't watch it, I'll show you one comment I've heard from the fight.
You know what? His is the most watched press conference after the fact.
Yeah.
If something happens.
Okay, fair, yes.
If nothing happens, nobody's watching.
No, agreed. What I mean by
is... So if he gets Diaz's brother to throw bottles at him or to make him mad, and he takes the bottles and he throws it back at him, and then the press conference goes to hell, so yeah, people are watching it.
And when you fight him, the whole
and
break
I'll tell
up
you
the
what,
red panties,
if that,
he's
if that
good.
Keeps happening, like time after time
oh, that
after
won't.
Time,
I
I'm just telling you,
it'll
people
get
are going to stop
out.
Watching.
Fair, and I agree with that. Why it got so many rave reviews, and this you'll like, because you're a boxing guy, right?
Yep.
I don't know if you've seen all these people talking right now on ESPN, whatever other things. All they're talking about is how this is one of the best fights they've ever seen. And they say it's because they stood up and fought the whole time. There was no taking it down. Do you think that's good or bad for boxing? The fact that this fight was great, so you
don't
think it affects it? They're two separate things?
No, they're two separate things, but boxing's going that way and UFC's going this way. So it's just continuing the momentum of what's already been started.
Do you think it ever gets it back?
Boxing? They're going to need a Muhammad Ali. They're going to need a heavyweight boxing champion that people care about.
And someone
and
to go against
gonna,
them,
that's
too,
not an
right?
easy thing.
You need other people.
No, they don't. Everybody loved Tyson when he was whacking tomato cans.
That's
come
fair.
On.
That's fair.
They don't care. You find somebody that they'll care about that's going to go out and beat everybody. They don't care who they're fighting. But that guy's not there.
Last question, not even going to spend a lot of time on it.
That's so funny because I was listening to the guy do the interview today on Sportsnet in Toronto, and he's talking to Connor McDavid, and we'll hear some of that. And I swear, there must have been five last questions. Because I think you know, you're making him feel uncomfortable, and you think, well, hey, I'm making him feel like I'm keeping him on too long, so I'll just keep going. Oh, last question.
So then he gets him with it.
Yeah.
But this one's simple. We ragged on Brazil quite a bit leading up to it. We reported everything that they said out there. It was not us writing it, but let's be honest, we weren't like giving it the benefit of the doubt. At the end of the day, I think the only thing I saw really wrong with it...
You went with at the end of the day?
Was the pool... Well, at the end of the...
The green water?
The green water was okay. But other than that...
Well, wait a minute.
The Ryan Lochte one wasn't even their fault.
What about those guys with the guns on Lochte and then they robbed him?
That's the Americans.
They put a gun to his head.
Well, that's my point. Brazil's not the... I think they're Ryan Lochte's biggest fan because he took all the attention away from them.
A lot of things happened, but in the end, he gave them something to make them look better with.
And I don't think it was as bad as people thought it would be.
No.
And in the end, I'll give them some credit for that. To be honest, it's one of my favorite Olympics I've watched in a long time. Now, that's the athletes, but still, pretty amazing, and I really enjoyed it.
Ladies and gentlemen, Grant Robbins.
The opening face-off with Elliot Price and Grant Robinson.
Boy, did Grant talk a lot. We're not going to have a lot of time for voices there. He's, and I want you to know that everything is written in... it's not script. It's not block letters. He writes them in lowercase.
Print. Are you judging my writing?
Freddie, did that sound like I was judging him?
It's
I was describing.
Nice. Yeah.
You can write however you want. I write in block letters. I have my entire life. But yeah, you're a little sensitive today. Something happened on the weekend that we should know about?
Nothing. A great weekend.
Did you get to Lester's Deli?
Not yet. I you don't go on the weekend. I was not in the right mind.
I don't tell people enough that they're closed on Sunday. Because Freddie went. Freddie went. They're closed on Sunday. Okay? That's why you call 213-1313 and you get the food in your home so that when they're closed on Sunday, you actually have Lester's Deli in your home. They've perfected how to package the love they have for smoked meat. So when you call 213-1313 and you make sure they complete the experience for you, the bread, the mustard, the pickles, the coleslaw, there is no better. Lester's Deli, the experience and tradition at home. 1057 Bernard, come see Bill the Legend at his natural habitat and have a smoked meat. Our voices are coming up. The gold medal winners for Canada in a moment.
Say goodbye to buffering, stuttering, and annoying pop-ups. Say hello to Sportsnet now. A new way to stream sports without cable TV. Matchups from the MLB, NBA, and the NHL. And more of your favorite Sportsnet programming. Plus, watch every Blue Jays game on any device in true high definition. Your sports, your way, starts now. Visit sportsnet.ca/now to start your free trial.
You're listening to Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price and Grant Robinson.
All right, time for voices. Four gold medals for Canada. Have a listen. Of course, Penny Oleksiak. Delivered Canada's first gold. Shocking. To her family. This is her brother.
I think she surprised everyone, including our family. You know, I think I didn't even know she was, you know, I always knew she was good, but I never knew she was, you know, Olympic good until she really qualified for the team and whatnot. But I think, you know, she's only been swimming for the past 5 years, and what she's done is incredible. And I think this Olympics was kind of a chance to, you know, get her feet wet, you know, literally, I guess. And, but she, despite all the odds stacked against her and whatnot, she's done incredible. So it's really, it says a lot about her competitiveness and, you know, just the work she's put in.
It's amazing. Jamie Oleksiak, who, by the way, plays in the National Hockey League. Gold medal number two, the high jump. I love this one. Derek Drouin. He was ready.
Everything is always geared toward, whatever the major championship. Obviously, this year was the Olympic Games. So, in April and May, I'm definitely not jumping as high as I would hope or as high as I hope to in August. But I've been with my coach for so long and trust fully that he's going to have me ready in August that it's pretty easy to sit back and just enjoy it and just trust the process and really believe that, he'll have me peaking at the right time.
All of the gold medals were awesome. That was a good one. Derek Drouin in the high jump. Erica Weeb, she won in wrestling, 75 kilograms.
You know, when I woke up this morning and I wasn't sure if it was real life. And then I started moving around. And I was like, oh, my God, I'm so sore. Like, this must be true. You think about it so many times and you imagine it. You watch other Canadians have that moment. And when it's you, it's like an out-of-body experience.
And finally, Canada with a repeat gold. Trampoline. Hey, look, she brought the flag in and another gold medal. Rosie McLennan didn't think she was going to win it.
Lee Dan, the girl who ended up third. When I watched her routine, I actually turned to my coach and said that will take it. And she was, as I said, she was the one to beat here in our own community. But unfortunately, I think the pressure got to the last competitor. And when she had a few flaws in her final routine, and based on her routine, I did think, I mean, you never know, but my coach kind of looked at me and said that he thought I would keep it.
There you go. Canada's four gold medalists. Meanwhile, Connor McDavid, who will win a gold medal someday playing for Canada, but he's not going to play for Canada in the World Cup of Hockey. He's going to play for Team North America.
That's going to be a very good tournament. It's going to be highly competitive. You know, it's the best players in the world. So, for our team, it's going to be about
defense and being responsible in the D zone. Offensively, I don't think we're going to have any trouble. So it's just going to be about keeping the puck out of our net. I'm very excited about our team that we have. And we definitely don't have too much pressure on us, which is always nice. So can't wait to get it going.
Connor McDavid talking today in Toronto, where he was representing a booster drink company or something of some sort, and got to answer some questions because of that on Sportsnet 590. Meanwhile, Aaron Sanchez, you know this story, right? One of the best pitchers in baseball, and they sent him to the minors, which makes sense if you understand the whole situation. He won't pitch for 10 days. He's not really going to the minors. He's going home. Okay, he's going to rest for 10 days, not going to throw any pitches. He's a rookie, and there's only so many pitches. Not that it helps. And we'll talk about that in just a moment. Aaron Sanchez, he understands. He gets it.
It just gave us the option to kind of bring somebody up in time of need. We have a couple minor injuries with a couple players that, you know, they weren't too sure if they were going to play. And this just gives us, you know, by them already knowing I'm skipping the start, it just gave them the opportunity to make this move, and I'll be back in no time.
Back in no time. So really, you know, it's 10 days, but you skip a start, it's 5 days, and then you pitch 5 days after that. So he's skipping a start, he gets 10 days off, he's going home, he can see mom, and everything will be okay. There you go. And did you notice that Steven Strasburg went back on the disabled list today? So the Washington Nationals, not pitching this guy, right? Doing with him what Toronto was thinking about doing with Sanchez, shutting him down after a certain amount of innings, cost him a chance at a World Series, and he's been on the disabled list, I believe, 4 times since. So there's just no way to prevent, right now, to prevent these kinds of things from happening. So you try, but nobody knows what is and what isn't. Meanwhile, Alex Radulov met the Canadiens press here in Montreal today, looking at his new stall and new practice facilities in Brossard.
Well, it's an honor, and I'm really happy to finally be here and get ready for the season and train with the guys and being in this amazing facility. It's a lot of fun, and I'm excited.
So why the National Hockey League again? Why are you back?
Well, you know, I've been always saying that it's the best league, and there's the best players playing here in the high level, and that's why, you know, and when you're looking back, you know, times fly, and right now I think this is a chance for me to be here and play in the best league and finally get a chance to win the cup, and that's the main thing.
There you go. If there's time, and I believe there is, somewhere near the end of the show, more Radulov. Thanks to Sean Farrell, who, by the way, will be here tomorrow to join us in studio. And we'll have some roundtable conversation, talk Habs, talk hockey, talk impact, talk football, whatever. Be more of a conversation. Maybe you'd like to join us. Give us a call. We can talk sports tomorrow night. That'll be fun. Also, my conversation with Neil Huntington, general manager of the Pittsburgh Pirates. He'll join us tomorrow night, too, and we'll talk that. And, of course, he was with the Montreal Expos in 1994. He was in the front office, and that disappointment, but done a hell of a job in rebuilding the Pirates. Arash Madani is going to wrap it for us. Sportsnet's Arash Madani, wrap Rio, wrap the Olympics. That's coming up after Grant's update, which is coming up in just a moment.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules. Rule number one, no touching of the
Elliot Price.
And that's it!
Ding, 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 ding. Elliot.
Ding, ding, ding.
Price.
Tough love. Ding, ding, ding.
This guy is a wrecking machine.
Do not tangle with me. I'm a trained expert in karate. My hands are lethal weapons.
You want a piece of me?
Oui, Papa.
Let's rumble.
Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price.
It's go time.
Weeknights at 8 p.m. on 1280 a.m. Montreal.
It's a waste of life.
It's one more trip to Rio to wrap things up with Arash Madani, who's probably had an incredibly busy fortnight as they start putting things away and getting ready to come home. Arash, how's it going?
Elliot, it's been great, man. It's been a hell of a run, and it's always bittersweet when these things end, right?
Absolutely, and we did ourselves proud. We set a goal, and we surpassed our goal. We found new stars. And we were Canada, right? We didn't have a Hope Solo. We didn't have a Lochte. We had people who helped other people. That's us, right?
Yeah, and we also had a golden penny who became a magic penny who rewrote the Canadian history books for one single game. Never before had a Canadian athlete won four medals in one game, including a gold, and then a 16-year-old swimmer does. So there she was, the flag bearer for the closing ceremony, and what we were reminded of on Sunday, Elliot, was that she's just a teenager. You know, they brought her into the press conference, and she kind of sat down, and they said, okay, well, Penny, opening remarks, and she said, I'm super honored. And then I asked her, what have you been doing for the last week? She's like, sleeping, chilling out, eating a lot of junk food, eating a lot of McDonald's. You know, she's a kid. She's a teenager. And as the focus now shifts for Tokyo 2020, she and Andre DeGrasse are going to be the two faces of the franchise, of the program, of the Canadian Olympic team.
And when you look at where some other medals might be and other young athletes, so you look at Canada's soccer team and, you know, the passing of the torch. And, you know, Sinclair might be back. I mean, she's not going to be an old lady 4 years from now, still capable of playing the game. But look at the 17-year-old. That was the youngest player ever to score a goal at the Olympics. We are blessed with great young talent that's looking forward to 4 years from now.
Yeah, one of the finest fullbacks in the world, Kadisha Buchanan. There's Ashley Lawrence, only 21 years old now. Janine Becky, of course, Jesse Fleming, who you're referring to, Elliot. Yeah, there's no question with the women's soccer program. They kind of rebuilt on the fly with a core of their six vets from London 2012. Then you look at the women's basketball team that disappointingly lost in the quarterfinal, but Kia Nurse is going to end up being one of the best players in the world, regardless of citizenship, and she's only in college right now. So the best is yet to come there. The goal for that women's program is not just a medal in Tokyo, but they've talked about gold. Now, that may be a little lofty. You were talking about an American team. That's one of the last six gold medals. So it's, you know, individual sport athletes, the track, the pool, and then the big-time team sports. Soccer, basketball, there's hopes, there's shots, there's no question.
Yeah, you named some amazing soccer players. I was actually talking about Deanne Rose. You add that name to the list of great Canadian young soccer players, and boy, oh boy, you wish one of them was a man. Canada's men's soccer team, just, you know. Anyways, moving right along, it was a couple of weeks that didn't exactly measure up to what people thought they were heading towards when they went to Rio for the Olympics. What was different about what you expected and what actually happened?
Well, I mean, the venues were ready. I saw, Elliot, maybe a dozen mosquitoes. I mean, has anyone mentioned Zika since they lit the flame? Crime, not a factor at all. Apparently, having peroxide in your hair, it can filter into your brain, though, if you're an American, and you can come up with some kind of crazy story about being held up at gunpoint. It's delivered. And there was such an uneasiness about these games. And so often people talked about, you know, the lack of attendance in the venues. It's because of the hysteria and the panic that the world put on these games, and so few visitors actually came because they were worried. And there was, in the end, no need for that kind of fear. It's a credit to the organizing committee here that amidst one of the worst recessions in the history of the country, they have pulled off the first Summer Olympics for Brazil, the first Summer Olympics for South America, but they've also pulled off a statement here that it can be done, and you don't have to spend $51 billion like Vladimir Putin did to put on a winter game in Sochi.
Yeah, you also don't have to have little Mosuls to pass your pee through for your athletes to win medals.
And that's a big issue here. I mean, listen, the dark cloud over this entire thing is doping, and it remains an issue, and the fact that we only had a handful of positive tests really makes you wonder a little bit, doesn't it? Now, Tricia Smith is the head of the Canadian Olympic Committee. She's just been named to the executive of the IOC, and Elliot, she said, I'm not going to rest until we get change here. And you just wonder, in this cat-and-mouse game of trying to catch dirty athletes and trying to make it an even and level playing field, if that's a possibility, if that can happen. And, you know, we're now just finding out that athletes from 2008 and 2012, because of the sophisticated changes to drug testing and the samples that were kept, they're now being suspended and medals are being awarded to those who finished fourth and fifth. I'm starting to wonder now, will it be 8 years from now that we're going to hear, actually, the gold medalist in this event is being stripped because we have now more sophisticated technology that shows a positive test?
Well, Arash Badani of Sportsnet, who's been there from the beginning at Rio for the 2016 Olympic Games. Any event surprise you? I think one that kind of opened people's eyes was the women's rugby seven, or really the rugby in general, how frenetic it could be in a short period of time.
Yeah, and Elliot, I don't watch the women because Canada was in it. They didn't qualify on the men's side. Fearless. I mean, they are just running with reckless abandon and have no issue getting absolutely crunched. And I think the legacy of these Olympics from that standpoint is that now, like with women's soccer in London, there might be some young girls across the country who want to run and hit and score like Jen Kish, like she's Lan Landry. That may be one of the lasting images. I think on the track too, Melissa Bishop just coming up short in the 800. Damian Warner in the decathlon, that has to be the most difficult of them all. Winning a bronze, I mean, that's a statement for him. And most of all, it's DeGrasse. You know, we went 20 years since Donovan Bailey without a track sprinting medal. And now here's a kid who enters three events and gets to the podium three times. And he has his sights on, Elliot, gold in Tokyo 2020. He mentioned no words on Saturday when he held a press conference. And he says his goal is to win triple gold, just like Usain Bolt did. So we'll see what DeGrasse can do as the years come on, too.
From Rio, it's Arash Madani from Sportsnet. Obviously, an Olympics and medals bring our country together. And I wonder about, watching the final Tragically Hip from so far away and Canadians looking at each other, kind of bringing a community together so far away.
Yeah, and I was actually lucky. I went to Canada Olympic House for the show, and it was a bunch of athletes and coaches and staff and parents and friends and the rest of it. And, yeah, it was a very, Canadian moment, if you will. And it was neat to be there for it. And, on the eve of the closing ceremony, to have Gord Downie bid his farewell, just as some of Canadians, Olympic heroes bid farewell. The Adam Vancouverdens, who, memorably won that gold in Athens in 2004. He came back. He wasn't sure if he was going to come back for Rio 2016. He did. Wasn't able to perform on that day. And Vancouverden, Elliot, had a great line. He said, you can't write your final chapter. Very few athletes get a chance. But for the next generation of Canadian Olympians, their story is only beginning. And they lived up to the billing. And that's what makes kind of the future so interesting, so intriguing. And, there is the proof's in the pudding. 22 medals, the most since Atlanta 96. You're already almost looking forward to the next summer games, even though they're 4 years away.
Are you tired?
Yeah, man. It's been a run. I actually did the Rogers Cup tennis just before coming here. So it's been like 32, 33 days. So I'm looking forward to a nap.
Now you come home, there's a pennant race to come to, will you?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, great talking to you. Thank you so much for making some time for us at Rio. You did a great job there, and we look forward to talking to you again later on. Thanks.
Okay, Elliot. Thanks, man.
Busy. We'll be talking to Avi Goldberg, our sociologist. Did the National Hockey League listen to their fans this summer? Did they give them enough respect? Avi wants to know. I think he's upset. Don't upset the sociologist is what I say. We are down to team number 13 in our National Football League countdown after 9 o'clock. It's getting serious. But still no Raiders. Daniel Kalis will join us for that. You better not miss Giovanni Sardo. I'm sure he's upset. I can't wait to hear what he has to say about the Impact's fine performance at home on the weekend. They got their tushes whacked. And finally, Sports Rage, Gabe Morenci. I always want to hear what he has to say. But the prof is next. It's Avi Goldberg coming up.
More than a hockey jersey, it's a badge of honor, a symbol of pride. And when the world's best wear it, they're not just players. They are pillars, carrying a nation on their shoulders. This September, Crosby, Kane, Ovechkin, Lundqvist, and over 150 of the world's brightest stars are coming to Toronto to compete in an international tournament and stake their claim as hockey's best. The World Cup of Hockey. For more information, go to WCH2016.com.
You're listening to Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price and Grant Robinson.
Welcome back to the show. It's time for our professor. We'll see what has him in a bind right now. Something's bugging him. It's our sociologist. It's Avi Goldberg. He joins us every Monday. Mr. Goldberg, how are you today?
Elliot, I'm a little bit tired, a little bit testy today. First day back teaching, but you know what it's like with teachers. We have absolutely no right to complain after a nice long summer break.
And don't you love your job? I don't understand. I mean, you know, everybody loves school.
School is the best. You know, the kids are great young people. They're the leaders of the future. Look, as long as it's give and take in the classroom, it is definitely fun. But I think that, you know, they were a bit shell-shocked on day one. They don't always realize that, you know, we are a little bit shell-shocked on day one as well.
All right. Let's see. What's on your mind? Avi lets me know what's on his mind, and then we talk about it. He thinks that NHL fans were not taken care of as they should have been this summer. And that means Avi, because Avi's the NHL fan who's upset here. So what specifically, what is the problem here? What did you not get that you thought was needed?
It's all about me, Elliot. And
of course it is.
I am, you know, the most important fan in the country.
I have always said it's all about me, no matter who you are, and if it's not, you're lying. But that's okay.
Exactly. No. Yeah, and I'm truthfully a bit upset, but you know, I'm also a little bit amused as well. But overall, I think the one thing that I have been noticing and thinking about in the last few weeks is just kind of thinking about the NHL as a little bit tone deaf to, you know, some kind of interesting issues and trends that have been going on. I think it kind of started for me back a couple of weeks ago. I don't even know if it was really that talked about too much, but Gabriel Landeskog of the Colorado Avalanche had a really great piece in the Players Tribune called something to the effect of, we need, you know, the NHL needs to talk about concussions or have more, you know, talk about concussions. Did you happen to read that piece, Elliot?
I did not.
Did not. So anyway, I mean, it came out August 2nd. It's obviously, you know, the Olympics are just getting going or right about to. It's a dead period for hockey, that's for sure. But it was a really thought-provoking piece. And if you think about what he wrote in that piece, not only on its own, but even in relation to incidents from, you know, several years back, 4 and 5 years back, when you had the summer of Rippon and Bugard and Wade Bielak all dying, sadly, in the same summer. Additional, George Larrack. I know George Larrack is kind of loved and hated, but George Larrack around that time, you know, spoke about what it's like to be a fighter in the NHL and the psychological distress that fighters are under, you know, knowing that basically they have to be ready to fight, you know, every single night. The point is that Landeskog kind of wrote about what it was like for him to get a very serious concussion and how after he had been named captain of the team, he felt so much pressure to basically go back on the ice to support his teammates. He described kind of these very informal ways that, you know, you sort of feel like you can't let the guys down. The point is not that he was saying that, you know, there should be no physical contact in hockey, only that, you know, and he wasn't certainly trying to drive people away from hockey or remove the physical play, but he was basically saying that there needs to be much more discussion about you know, the psychological pressure associated with the game, the absolute need for players to be honest if they're having any concussion-like symptoms, because they need to actually, of course, take care of their brain. So the point is, there's a tremendous piece. It kind of builds upon a discussion that's been building up for a few years. And I thought that was really important, but it was so disheartening to think about Landeskog's contribution in relation to Gary Bettman's recent comments, in which he's basically totally denying any type of scientific connection between repeated hits to the head in the game of hockey and CTE, or some of the most deadly brain diseases that people are investigating, okay, but only in relation to hockey, but in relation to the NFL, too.
Avi, regardless of what a smart gentleman like Mr. Bettman believes, right now this is what this is the road that his league chooses, and he's the spokesman for them. And so, with all of these lawsuits that are coming up, this is his job.
He can't obviously come right out, and of course, it has a lot to do with the legal the lawsuit that is, you know, happening right now. I think it's about 200 players against the National Hockey League. So obviously, he's not going to come right out and say, "Oh, yeah, you're right. We were responsible. We must do something for the players." The most frustrating thing, though, is that there are people in the sport, around the sport, journalists, players, fans, who are saying that they're, you know, very prominent journalists in Canada, saying things like, you know, we have to be able to acknowledge some role that the NHL can do more to try to assist in terms of the investigation. And as well, some people have said, you know, Bettman is being a little bit dishonest, just in the sense that he keeps referring to the lack of scientific proof that hits to the head lead to CTE, but there are a whole other series of post-traumatic symptoms, perhaps other types of diseases, for which scientific links do exist, and if not scientifically links exist, at least there's a pretty clear understanding that there are connections between, you know, the need to protect the head and other damage that happens to players. So while he obviously cannot come that far and say that the league has to be responsible for this, there is, I would say, a certain tone deafness there when people like Gabriel Landeskog are just crying for the ability to talk about some of these real dynamics that happen that sometimes put players unnecessarily at risk, when probably most players would like to definitely do things to make it a safer environment for them on the ice.
Avi Goldberg is our sports sociologist. He's a sociologist, but it's a sports show, so we'll make him our sports sociologist.
I am the sports sociologist.
There you go. And that's not the only thing bothering him with the World Cup of Hockey coming. Avi is upset. The promotional information that was released by the National Hockey League last week, and now you're what else is bothering you, Avi? Come on, it's good. It's good to talk. Let it out. Come on.
I need to vent. You know,
yes, vent.
Just coincidentally, I vented earlier in one of my classes today about the PK Subban trade. So we're still going through that.
Oh,
but anyway,
my goodness!
One thing
I know. Earlier you said you were amused and somewhat angry. And
yeah.
And I tell you what, you really should medication. Maybe see someone. When those two things are mixed together, there's something very wrong here, Avi.
Well, I believe in multiple methods to improve our mental health. Let's not have any doubt about
right.
that, Elliot.
But, I stopped you. Go ahead.
In terms of the World Cup of Hockey, though, and this one is, I would say, a little bit more on the amusing side than me being angry. But
good.
I just thought it was funny that the NHL released its promotional information about last week. You know, got quite a bit of play that, you know, the tournament's going to be happening in a week or so, and everyone's getting excited for hockey. There's going to be all sorts of new great things purportedly for the fans. There's going to be advertising on the jerseys. There's going to be advertising along the boards. Perhaps more interesting, there's going to be the league is going to be trying out a whole bunch of technologies attached to the pucks and attached to the players' jerseys. The claim being that, you know, we're going to learn, the fans are going to be able to get so much information that's going to help them to understand the game of hockey and to really understand the tactics and the action and so on and so forth. There's another interesting set of, this is very interesting sociologically, there's another interesting set of promotions in that as a part of the World Cup of Hockey, in Canada, they're going to be inviting new Canadians who are going to be given lessons on how to play hockey, right? So new immigrants to Canada are going to be given lessons how to play hockey. And there's even going to be apparently a citizenship ceremony where something like 100 new Canadians are going to be sworn in as new Canadians, therefore solidifying their connection not only to Canada, but connecting it to hockey as well. I just find it to be a little bit amusing with this hyper-emphasis on Canada and the new Canadians.
Excuse me. Did you not see that commercial? Who invented hockey? Hockey invented Canada. Did you miss that? Come on,
was
Abby.
It Montreal or was it Montreal or was it Kingston? But let me tell you this, Elliot. What's all this hype about Canada and hockey when, as we know, we've just suffered through no Canadian teams within the playoffs? Right, that's one sort of issue.
That's not a Canadian thing.
If hockey is so much for Canada, why did the NHL not give a new hockey team to our neighbors up in Quebec City?
I understand. Here's the problem, Avi. You fill all of those Canadian teams with the best Canadian players, and we'll see some Stanley Cups in this country. All right? So it's not really a Canadian thing. Canadians aren't the problem here with those teams not making the playoffs.
But I think what he's saying is that the NHL is not giving them control.
I understand what
this whole idea that the game is going to be promoting ourselves and our country. I think us right now are suffering a little bit in this game of hockey, having been shut out, not being awarded the team. I think, and there's also that, not to mention the fact that there's been all this talk underground about maybe Canadians are, don't say it too loud, but maybe some young Canadians are actually more interested in basketball. Than hockey.
I got one of those at home.
Show the connection.
I can tell you, I got one of those at home. All right, very good. Look, you got some of it out. I think you're going to have to come back next week and back on the couch, and we'll talk some more.
Next week, I'm going to do my best to come up with something that shows how exuberant and happy I am, as opposed to how upset and angry I am.
Well, the best of luck then.
talk to you next week.
Avi Goldberg, ladies and gentlemen. Starting to get serious here with our National Football League countdown. Daniel Kalis, not that far into the future. We're looking at team number 13. Next week, we'll get it down to team number 4. And then the following week, we'll have 3 teams left. And I have a plan. I have a plan for those 3 teams. We'll discuss. But we got an update coming up with Grant Robinson. Then we'll talk to Daniel Kalis. Then we'll talk to Giovanni Sardo, who is just chopping at the bit somewhere on the impact. So stay calm, Giovanni. Stay calm. We still have football right around the corner.